Rookie minicamp gets underway on Friday in Green Bay with draft picks, undrafted free agents, and trial players hitting the practice field for the first time. To put into perspective the larger picture the rookies find themselves in, we're joined today by Dean Burhau-Gall, the NFC North blogger at 24/7 Sports. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking about the Packers rookie minicamp this morning, and to do so, we have joining us on the phone...
Expert interview.
We have Dean Burhau-Gall, the NFC North blogger here at 24/7 Sports. Dean, how you doing this morning?
I'm good, Brian. Glad to be on the show, man.
Yeah, glad to have you joining us. Dean actually covered the Packers before I came on board, and now he still covers the rest of the NFC North, the Bears, the Vikings, the Lions. I want to get his perspective on things. We're going to put our conversation kind of in context of a comment I received from former Packers defensive back Matt Bowen at the NFL draft this past weekend. And I'm just going to play this audio clip very briefly because it's going to kind of set the scene for the rest of our conversation. So here's Matt Bowen talking about the NFC North at the NFL draft.
Look what Chicago just did. They drafted Kevin White. Okay. Calvin Johnson's over in Detroit. If Teddy Bridgewater's the guy in Minnesota, they're going to sling the ball around. You need defensive backs in that division, not just to win, but to survive.
That's an interesting comment. Bowen says you need defensive backs in that division, not just to win, but to survive. So, Dean, let's talk about the NFC North, starting with the Chicago Bears. As Bowen noted, the Bears picked Kevin White in the first round. Is he going to be a guy that's going to be able to replace Brandon Marshall's production in his rookie year?
Yeah. You know, I think actually White's cut from the same cloth as Marshall is. You know, he's just a huge physical presence that's going to be on the outside opposite of Alshon Jeffery. You know, he's 6'3", he's 215, and it was just it's unbelievable just how measurables can be such a big factor in today's NFL. You know, he just absolutely blew up the NFL combine. You know, a guy that size who runs like a 4.35 40 is insane. But yeah. You know, he's got the same kind of dominating physical presence that Brandon Marshall has, but, you know, obviously he's not going to have the off-the-field baggage that Marshall has. He's not going to require as much salary, and he's not the same age. So I think White has a really good shot to do that. I mean, he's got Cutler, who on a good day on his, you know, when he's on, he can put the ball just about wherever he wants. So I think the Bears kind of took the best player available approach, and with White, I think they've got another chance to have one of the best duos in the league.
Yeah, I don't know. There seems to be a minority of people out there who think, you know, Kevin White really only had 1 year of really good production at West Virginia. I don't know. I just think it's because he came from a JUCO and he was finding his feet last year, and I think he's going to be really, really good. I think he's talented. White joins Alshon Jeffery in Chicago. Now, my question is, will having a good duo of receivers be able to help Jay Cutler, or is Jay just going to be Jay?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, you know, because we've seen Jay Cutler play with really incredible weapons. I mean, it's kind of, he was honestly spoiled, if you think about it. You know, you've got Brandon Marshall, you've got Alshon, two massive athletic receivers on the outside. You've got Martellus Bennett, who has just one of the biggest catch radiuses in the league. And then behind you, you've got Matt Forte, who's one of the best running backs in the league, can catch the ball in the backfield and all that. And he really wasn't, it's not like he was playing behind the Cowboys offensive line, but he also wasn't playing behind, you know, a really leaky one. But that is kind of the question. I think that, when the Bears committed to Jay Cutler, and you know, there's always some kind of tomfoolery going on before the draft. You know, there are the reports that emerged about them trying to trade with the Titans to move up to take Mariota. But when they committed to Cutler, I think it was really just a matter of they think that John Fox, they think that Adam Gase, offensive coordinator, and they think that Dowell Loganes, the quarterback's coach, you know, they've all got a history in Denver, and Gase and Loganes have it when Cutler was there. I think that they just believe that they can change Jay, you know, and I mean, we've had that before where Mark Trestman came in and he was the quarterback whisperer, and, you know, that worked. That first season, you know, you saw some improvements, but this last season was an absolute train wreck. And so I think they just believe that the new regime is going to change things. I think they're probably going to rely a little bit more on the run game. You see them adding running backs in the draft with Jeremy Langford from Michigan State. They've added some through free agency with Jacquizz Rodgers. It's just, I think Jay's, you know, I think he's on one of his last shots here, because they're committed to him this year. I'm not sure about 2016. You know, we could be running into this whole same fiasco next offseason. Although the Bears are going to be on the hook to pay him $10 million. He's got $10 million in his contract guaranteed for 2016. So even if they get rid of him this offseason, they'll have to pay him that. But, you know, it's just Jay's going to be Jay. You know, he's going to frustrate Chicago fans, but he's also going to bring them, you know, pure elation maybe this year if he's lighting up the NFC North with Kevin White and the rest of his weapons.
I think it's dubious whether Jay can be changed, but Godspeed, Bears coaching staff, if you think that's the case. The Vikings, meanwhile, went the same route as the Packers in the first round and went in the secondary. Do you think that's part of the same philosophy where you need defensive backs to survive in the division, them taking Trey Waynes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you saw Waynes was really linked to the Vikings for quite a while. You know, you have kind of smoke screens here and there, but it was, if you read the tea leaves, you could kind of see that the Vikings really liked him. Zimmer was at his pro day, talked about how much he liked him, but really the reason the Vikings took Trey Waynes is, I mean, you've got six big ones, as NFL.com's Gil Brandt pointed out at the time. I remember this tweet pretty vividly. Was he said Vikings have six big reasons. It's and he goes Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Golden Tate, Calvin Johnson, Alshon Jeffery, and Kevin White. Yeah. So I mean, and I mean, Viking fans and maybe Packer fans remember pretty plainly. Last year you had Xavier Rhodes on the outside, and he kind of emerged with the coaching of Mike Zimmer. And that was actually a pretty good story for the Vikings last year, how much better he got. But for Waynes, you know, he's just a player that they didn't have on the outside last year. Instead, they had Josh Robinson, who's about 5'9", you know, 200 pounds. And yes, he played a little bit better in his natural position on the outside, but, you know, he was boxed out, I think, three, four, five times last year just for jump balls in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of realizing that in today's game, you know, you can't have a 5'9" cornerback playing on the outside. And so they've still got Captain Munnerlyn. They brought in the veteran Terrence Newman, who may have a little something to say about whether Trey Waynes is the immediate starter. But Zimmer loves the guy. He's great in bump and run. He's great in that defensive scheme. He's struggled a little bit with his, like, you know, moving side to side and his quickness, but his top end speed is unbelievable. And if Zimmer can turn Rhodes into one of the, you know, there was a stretch there where he was one of the best cornerbacks in the league. If he can do that with Rhodes in 1 year, you know, it's got to be kind of intriguing to see what he's going to do with Wayne.
Now, it didn't happen in the draft, but the Vikings acquired Mike Wallace earlier in the offseason, trading for him. Will a change of scenery be good for Mike Wallace, and will he form a dangerous tandem with Teddy Bridgewater and kind of contribute to this notion that the NFC North is kind of a passing division?
Yeah, you know, I think it was definitely a surprise to me when the Vikings, you know, when I think I was actually on the road when I heard that they traded him, and so it gave me a decent amount of time. I didn't get to write about it for about 45 minutes, but I really got to digest it, and I was thinking to myself, man, You know, that is a splash move that the Vikings are not, you know, they're not really used to that. But if you think about it, I mean, Wallace is, you know, when he was in Pittsburgh, I mean, he wasn't Antonio Brown by any means, but he was an absolute burner. And whether it was that he couldn't get on the same page as Ryan Tannehill, that it was, you know, the offensive scheme, this or that, I don't know what it was, but I mean, he still had a productive year last year. I mean, he had 10 touchdowns, and you know, his yardages were a little bit lower and this and that, and his targets were a little bit lower, but you know, it is Ryan Tannehill compared to playing with Ben Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. But the thing that, you know, kind of really intrigues me is how he's going to Minnesota, and it's not that Teddy Bridgewater's playing quarterback, it's that Norv Turner is the offensive coordinator. Because when Turner was in Cleveland, you know, this will be his third year in Minnesota, second year in Minnesota, excuse me. When he was in Cleveland, you had Brian Hoyer as quarterback, you know, and it's not like he sets the world on fire, but you saw what happened to him and Josh Gordon, you know, and Mike Wallace isn't as physically imposing as Josh Gordon, but now Turner has a true, true deep threat in his offense, you know, and last year he's got guys like Charles Robinson, who he picked up off the practice squad at Cleveland, and all of a sudden this guy's one of Bridgewater's favorite receivers. So I think he really gives Bridgewater and he gives Turner a true, true deep threat to really take the top off the defense that kind of, you know, will keep defenders back. And then if Adrian Peterson's in the backfield, you know, you really gotta think that the Vikings offense is going to have a totally different look. But I think Wallace will have a lot better year. The numbers may not be there, but the presence will definitely be there.
Yeah. All right. Let's move over to Detroit. They didn't go defensive back in the first round, but they added to what appears to be a pretty good offensive line with Lake and Tomlinson. Is it possible the Lions will have one of the best offensive lines in the entire NFL?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely a good question, because last year, you know, they've got starters. You know, they've got Riley Reiff, that's first round pick on the left side. They just traded, and when they traded back, they brought in Manny Ramirez from Denver, who can start. They've got Lakin Tomlinson, who's probably one of the best guards in this draft behind Brandon Scherff. But the problem was last year they just had injuries everywhere. You know, Larry Warford, Adrian Waddle. You know, it just seemed like everybody was banged up and everybody had to be shuffled. You know, so much. I remember, you know, writing about it time and time again for the Lions side, just that they were getting shuffled like a card deck. You know, it was impossible. You know, they couldn't protect Matthew Stafford. They couldn't carve out running lanes for Joik Bell when he was there. And you can see that the Lions are really, really focusing on trying to address the run game this year. I mean, you take Lakin Tomlinson with your first pick. You get Amir Abdullah in the next round. And then in the fifth round, you're taking a fullback out of Rutgers, Michael Burton. Mm-hmm. So I think the Lions' offensive line, a lot of it's gonna, you know, just like a lot of teams, it's gonna depend on their health. You know, can these guys stay upright? Can they stay on the field? You know, they've got some depth now. Now that they've added Manny Ramirez, they've got Lakin Tomlinson. Dominic Raiola is gone, but you're right. I think the Lions' offensive line could be much better. I think their running attack could be much better. Joik Bell, you know, was consistent. Don't get me wrong. Reggie Bush couldn't even stay on the field. Theo Riddick looked like a good pass catcher out of the backfield. But I think Amir Abdullah really just changes their entire running game. The guy he's more explosive and elusive than just top end fast, I guess you would say. And he did it all in Nebraska. And so I think honestly, they're going to have a good chance to really ramp up their running game this year. And it's a little bit scary to pair with, the weapons they've got on the outside with Tate, Megatron. If Ebron picks it up, and then you pair that with how good that defense is, it's a little scary.
It kind of leads me right into my next question here with Tomlinson, and you know, will if he's able to kind of help the offensive line stabilize it, will having more time to throw allow Matthew Stafford to be more dangerous with the receiving core that already includes Kelvin Johnson and Golden Tate?
Yeah, I mean that offense is going to be scary. I mean, last year you saw Stafford's numbers were down. You know, his yards per attempt, his completions, his touchdowns, all that was down. But also his interceptions were down, and his quarterback rating was up. So Lions fans were happy with that. They were happy to play the whole all right, we've got one of the best defenses in the league. We have far and away the best run defense in the league. You know, we've got weapons on offense. It was honestly just how bad their offensive line was just an absolute killer to them. So you have to kind of question, you know, where that's going to go in 2015. And can Calvin Johnson stay healthy? You know, he's had a hard time in the past couple of years. But if they've got a good offensive line, one that keeps Matthew Stafford upright, one that gives him time, and one that, you know, helps carve out a run game, I mean, you know, the Lions' passing attack might be even better next year. I mean, it didn't set the world on fire. Golden Tate had a great year filling in when Megatron was out, and Calvin Johnson, you know, when he came back, he did a lot better. But, yeah, they're going to be dangerous.
So that kind of brings us full circle here and back to Green Bay and needing defensive backs to survive in the division. Do you think, Dean, that their early round draft picks like Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins will help stop these opposing aerial attacks?
Yeah, you know, I think it was really interesting to see which way the Packers went. You know, I wasn't following them as closely as you were on draft night, but it was like, what? Demarius Randall, that guy's a safety. Where are they going to play this guy? And then you check out the guy a little more, and you see that he's an absolute playmaker. You know, you just see the guys all over the field. You know, Quentin Rollins, he's got the interesting basketball background. It's just really intriguing. But yeah, you know, you can see Ted Thompson understands that it's going to be a passing division. I mean, the Vikings are. I mean, goodness gracious, man, I could talk to you about what I think the Vikings are going to do in 2015 all day. But, you know, I think Ted Thompson just understands that the NFC North is going to be really good, and that the NFC North could be really good through the pass. If John Fox and that new regime helps Jay Cutler become the quarterback they want him to be, if the offensive line can protect Matthew Stafford, and then if Teddy Bridgewater can continue to develop, you're looking at three, you know, along with the best quarterback in the NFL with Aaron Rodgers, you're looking at three in the top half, you know, the top 16, in the league. So I think he understands that, you know, you need guys in the secondary, you need playmakers. And he needed to add it. You know, once you lose Devon House, you lose Tremont Williams, and you're looking at whether you're going to put Casey Hayward on the outside. You don't really know what you're going to do there. It's honestly, if I'm a Packers fan, I'm really intrigued because I'm thinking, okay, we just added two playmakers to our secondary. We didn't add necessarily pure safeties. We didn't add pure cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. These guys are just going to make plays for us in the secondary.
Yeah, even I have no clue how they're going to use Demarius Randall, but hopefully we'll find out soon with Packers rookie minicamp taking place. I don't know if they're going to try to make him into a perimeter cornerback, whether they feel like he can do that or he's just going to be one of those slot guys or safeties. I mean, in today's NFL, it's kind of nebulous sometimes how these defensive backs are used in so many different roles. But anyway, Dean, before you go, I got to ask you one last thing about the saga unfolding in Minnesota over Adrian Peterson. There were a lot of rumors that he would be traded, but the NFL draft has now come and gone, and it didn't happen. Is there any chance it will still happen? And if not, where does Adrian Peterson go from here?
Yeah, you know, that was the big question. You know, were the Vikings going to fold to Peterson's agent Ben Dogra's demands? You know, I think Peterson's camp really understood that they had absolutely no leverage. They didn't have, you know, any way of trying to get out of Minnesota, and the only way they could do that is try to create a public controversy. You know, so you saw Dogra going, you know, getting a verbal altercation at the NFL Combine, and you saw Dogra talking to the media, and you saw Dogra do all these things for his client, you know, and that's what you do as an agent. You do what he wants to do, but there was just no way that a team was going to pay what the Vikings wanted for Peterson. I think it was reported a couple different places, you know, they wanted a second round pick. Okay. And no, that's not it. They want a first round pick. Oh, they actually want a first round and more. And there was just no way that a team like the Cardinals or the Cowboys, who are suddenly smart now that it's not Jerry Jones doing everything, we're going to pay this running back who's 30 is, you know, they're not going to pay him $13 million a year. You know, not in today's NFL. And so, and the Vikings, you know, it was really interesting, especially for me to think about it, because it was hard to decipher. It was like, okay, are they doing the Percy Harvin thing again? Is that what they're trying to do, where they you know, they keep his trade value high mm-hmm. by saying they want him on the team. Well, I think that's a totally different situation because, A, Harvin was a lot younger. He had flashed a little bit. He wasn't the, you know, wasn't due the kind of money that Peterson is. And then, of course, you had the suitor in the Seahawks who gave a first, a third, and a seventh. And there was no way that the Vikings were going to get a price like that. So once the first day was over, it was pretty clear that Peterson was going to stay. And then you saw that tone change from Peterson's agent, who probably understands the same thing, where he changed his tone from trade Peterson to why don't we commit to Peterson, air quotes, long term. And what he means by that is pretty clear that he means he wants the Vikings to guarantee some more money in his contract because he has no more guaranteed money yeah. on there. The Vikings could cut ties with him and be absolutely done with him. So I think at this point it's like, okay, Vikings, you know, do you want a happy Peterson? You know, the saga isn't quite ended because you've got mandatory minicamp starting in mid-June, and that's when he first really has to be there. It's not the OTAs that he has to be there for before he gets fined. So Peterson could try to make things a little bit difficult, you know, and skip out on workouts and say he wants guaranteed money and this or that. And the Vikings might succumb to that and say, you know what, we want a happy Peterson in our backfield. But he's playing. I would say there's a very, 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 very minimal chance he gets traded now.
Interesting. Well, Dean, this has been fun. You're going to be my go-to guy around the NFC North. So this is a good conversation. Glad to get your insight on today's show. And let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely, Brian, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks a lot. Dean Berhau-Gall joining us here at Railbird Central on 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well. And let's continue our conversation this morning.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, over the past 24 hours or so, some of the biggest news coming out of Titletown yesterday. Contracts have been agreed to by several of the Packers' draft choices. Last I heard, I believe four of them have signed. Is it five? Okay, so let's go through the list here. Jake Ryan, Michigan linebacker Jake Ryan in the fourth round. UCLA quarterback Brett Hundley in the fifth round. Oklahoma fullback Aaron Ripkowski in the sixth round, and also Christian Ringo, the defensive lineman from Louisiana Lafayette, in the sixth round. So those four players for sure have agreed to contracts reportedly. And, you know, they're almost every outlet here that covers the Packers has reported this, whether it's the Green Bay Press Gazette, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, ESPN.com. So, choose whoever you want to cite there for these reports. But and I provided at least several of the contract year-by-year details here at 24/7 Sports, some of the estimates that you can expect these guys to be receiving, because in today's NFL, ever since the 2011 collective bargaining agreement and the rookie slotting system that takes place, there's basically very little negotiation that takes place. Yeah, there's a little bit of wiggle room there for these guys to negotiate, especially with signing bonuses and things like that. But yes, that just basically they have to accept more or less what's offered. And it doesn't take long, not just in Green Bay, but across the NFL, for these deals with rookies now to come to fore. And I know some reporters have said they basically expect by today, by Friday, that all the Packers draft choices will be under contract. I don't know if the Packers are kind of waiting for them all to happen, to make it official. There is, you know, no press release or anything like that making them official. You know, the reports are just that they've agreed to the contracts, so not that they've actually put pen to paper yet and made everything official, but looks to be just a matter of time before that happens. So rookies arrived in Green Bay on Thursday. It was a travel day, so I know had a chance to talk to several of the rookies coming to Green Bay, and you know, they were flying out like Thursday morning, get there in the afternoon or so. And then by Thursday evening, they were taking part in meetings and introductions and things like that. And it's today, Friday, where minicamp, rookie minicamp, actually starts. It actually takes place with practices getting underway. I assume yesterday or maybe this morning they had physicals. They probably get that out of the way before they take the field. And I'm not even sure when it officially starts, but all I know is because it's not open to the public, that Mike McCarthy's press conference today starts at 1 o'clock p.m. Central Time on Friday, and that follows practice. So sometime before that point, Packers actually going to hit the field, the rookies are, and this will include draft choices. This will include undrafted free agents. This will include, you know, traditionally the Packers bring in about 20 or so tryout players. And also the first year players that do not have an accrued year of service in the NFL also take part in rookie minicamp. Those are the guys like who were on the practice squad last year, but never, you know, were on the 53-man roster, or if they were, it wasn't enough to get that, you know, year of service to count in the NFL. So all these people going to hit the practice field this morning in Green Bay for the very first time, their first opportunity to make an impression, first time to start learning some of the techniques and schemes and systems. And yeah, you have to imagine they're not going to overwhelm them during rookie minicamp. Perhaps some of the things they'll do is just work on fundamentals, I imagine, is the coaching staff going to want to see what they have in these players before they start overwhelming them with X's and O's and what their responsibilities are on the football field. They probably want to see, you know, the displays of athleticism more than anything. So they see what they have to work with. And I imagine that's what's going to happen today in Green Bay. I think it's always interesting, the tryouts, more than anything. Like I said, Packers traditionally bring in about 20 or so tryout players, and it's been a tradition in Green Bay too. They always keep a roster spot or two or three open for these tryout guys. So they know they're not coming to Green Bay in vain, more or less. They always, there's a carrot at the end of the stick, in that these guys have an opportunity to seize a roster spot if they can impress. You know, some of the success stories a few years ago, Jared Boykin was a tryout player and, you know, ended up, at least for a while, ended up being a pretty good receiver and still maybe in the NFL. Now he's in Carolina, just signing as a free agent in the offseason. But last year, Luther Robinson was a tryout player for the Packers. And he had to work really hard to go from tryout to receiving a contract. Worked all of training camp, started out on the practice squad to start the season. By midseason, some injuries happened. He was promoted to the 53-man roster, and everybody, I think, kind of remembers the play with Luther Robinson last year where he got into the Vikings game and you know, got right in the face of Christian Ponder, put a hit on him, albeit the ball was released, but he was right in his face as he released and ended up being a pick six by Julius Peppers. That was one of the more exciting plays of the entire season in Green Bay. So it was a feel-good moment for a guy who was a tryout player. So these guys coming to Green Bay, they'll have a chance to impress. And you know what? What the point I wanted to make here is, and pardon me if we're talking about trial players, but this is basically, you know, the only point of the entire year where I get to talk about tryout players in depth, because by Monday, our next episode of Railbird Central, rookie minicamp will be over, and maybe we can talk about the guys they were signed. But so I know these guys kind of don't really make a huge impression in the whole scheme of things here, but I really think that this year's draft class in general in the NFL and what the Packers got, what they got in the undrafted free agents, and even what they're getting in some of the tryout players, I see more talent out of this year's class than I have in any of the, you know, decade that I've been covering the Packers online. I think there's some real talent here. Of course, the headliner is Alabama quarterback Blake Sims, who that kind of came out of left field. Like, you were like, wow, the Packers, not only do they have Aaron Rodgers and they've got Scott Tolzien, they traded up to get Brett Hundley in the fifth round of the draft, and they signed Matt Blanchard a few weeks ago. Like, why are they bringing in, you know, arguably one of the top undrafted quarterbacks in this year's draft class? You know, why are they bringing in Blake Sims? I was like, wow, I just, you know, especially because they traded up to get Brett Hundley. I was just like, wow, Blake Sims too? Like, that's a good trial player right there. And I'm thinking his odds are probably, I mean, for all the trial players, their odds are long, but hey, it's worth it to take a look, see what he's got. I think the Packers are leaving the door open to Sims potentially like beating out a guy like Matt Blanchard. I mean, it's not inconceivable, folks, that the Packers could, even though they just signed Matt Blanchard a few weeks ago, if they really, really like what they saw out of Blake Sims, they could cut Matt Blanchard, you know, by the end of the weekend or you know, shortly thereafter, and go with Blake Sims as kind of their fourth string quarterback and keep him around just in case. I mean, you never know when a guy suffers an injury, when you're going to need that fourth quarterback to become the third or whatever, and you keep him around on the practice squad. I also haven't ruled it out. Blake Sims was a running back earlier in his career at the University of Alabama. I wonder if the Packers just see like, okay, you know, Blake Sims, we tried him as a quarterback. He doesn't really have what it takes to make it in the NFL, but he's got some athleticism, and they might, you know, have him stick around as a running back. I don't know if that's their mindset, but that's the way I would kind of approach it. And I think I've mentioned this before as well. The you know, with the NFL moving potentially, it looks like it hasn't happened yet, but it looks like the NFL will be moving 2-point conversions to the 1-yard line. I almost have to wonder if, you know, they're looking at some sort of wildcat quarterback situation that you can bring a guy like Blake Sims in to either run or pass, or, you know, bulldoze his way into the end zone, and you've got an extra, you know, you actually take Aaron Rodgers out of the game and put in an extra blocker for Blake Sims. I mean, now if you're going to actually pass, the argument is that you'd rather have Aaron Rodgers in to pass than anybody else. But I just wonder if that's maybe another line of thinking the Packers are potentially taking, at least at this point, when it's nothing more than a tryout, kind of no guarantees, no contract or anything for Blake Sims. But I just like a lot of these guys the Packers bringing in for tryouts. Two more guys I really like. James Castleman, defensive lineman from Oklahoma State. I thought, you know, not that he was a first-round talent or anything, but I thought in the NFL draft, this guy is definitely worthy of being drafted, and it apparently not. I mean, he, you know, didn't even receive an undrafted free agent contract from any team in the NFL. He's coming to Green Bay just on a trial basis, but I'm going to be writing an article on Castleman later today. I talked to Paul Beshear of PredictionMachine.com and how they kind of, you know, also had James Castleman very highly rated. I thought he was very productive at Oklahoma State. I think he was a two-time honorable mention all-conference player there. So again, not like first-team all-conference, but a guy who was productive. And I remember really, you know, I had heard of James Castleman, but I watched Oklahoma State's bowl game this past year. I believe they played Washington in the Cactus Bowl. And, you know, all of a sudden they put Castleman at fullback. Here's a guy who was 310 plus pounds. So, you know, defensive tackle type of guy. He's huge. He's massive. The Oklahoma State puts him at fullback. They actually throw him a pass out in the flat, and he takes it 48 yards up the field. Like, holy cow, this guy's 310 pounds. He just had a 48-yard reception. His athletic ability as a defensive lineman, I think, is rather rare, and maybe that's something he can offer the Packers. Not as a fullback, but maybe he's got the chance to be that guy who the Packers actually sign after minicamp takes place, and he's one of those few guys that earns a contract. And finally, Jake Silas, an offensive lineman from the University of Buffalo. He's like 6'7". He's really tall. He's got experience at both left tackle and right tackle. Buffalo had in terms of Buffalo football history, the University of Buffalo, which is not, you know, tradition rich by any means, they had two pretty good seasons back-to-back here in 2014, a little less in 2014, but in 2013, I think they went 8-5, went to a bowl game, and I believe Silas was very much a part of that. You could argue Khalil Mack was an even bigger part, but here's a guy, Silas, who had the opportunity to go against Khalil Mack in practice every day. Like I said, experience at left tackle and right tackle. I think the Packers a little low on depth at the tackle position in Green Bay. They're fine with Bakhtiari and Bulaga, but beyond that, they don't have any of those, you know, kind of real true tackle types that you can bring into the game and rely upon. I just think there's an opportunity here for a guy like Jake Silas, and will be interesting to see whether he can, you know, seize a roster spot in Green Bay, earn one this weekend. So those are a couple names: Blake Sims, James Castleman, Jake Silas. I'm really looking forward to hearing about how they did and seeing if they truly can, you know, earn a contract from the Green Bay Packers. And just one note here too, to wrap up the Packers news of the day segment here. Yesterday on Thursday, it was reported that Brett Favre is going to play a charity flag football game at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison the day after he's inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame. Kind of interesting. So if you want your chance to see Brett Favre in person, apparently it'll be a game made up of former teammates versus former opponents for Brett Favre, in a stadium of 80,000 people, you'll have your chance to do so. So kind of details, you know, how to get tickets, et cetera, kind of still have yet to be revealed. But that just coming down the pike on Thursday. As far as our final segment here,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday. Like I said, rookie minicamp taking place today. Mike McCarthy press conference at 1 p.m. And then tomorrow, wrapping up Packers rookie minicamp, another practice tomorrow. And then Mike McCarthy, I believe, has another press conference, if I remember correctly, 12:15 p.m. Central Time on Saturday. And that'll wrap things up. And then the Packers going to decide, you know, who of these tryout guys are they going to sign? Things like that. So some roster moves forthcoming here for the Packers. At some point, they'll probably announce the undrafted free agents too. So it's all happening really soon here. To just wrap things up, kind of interesting here, taking place Friday evening, the world premiere of Pitch Perfect 2 taking place in Los Angeles. Green Bay Packers players will be taking part. So guys like Clay Matthews, Josh Sitton, TJ Lang, David Bakhtiari, and Don Barclay heading out to L.A., heading out to Hollywood for a red carpet event, the world premiere of the movie taking place Friday night. It's going to be one of those paparazzi situations where they'll have the chance to walk the red carpet along with the stars from the movie, like Anna Kendrick and Rebel Wilson, and I'm sure those guys are excited that they're actually premiering in a movie. This is the world premiere. It doesn't hit theaters until next week, I believe. So we'll talk more about that then. But some offensive lineman and Clay Matthews from the Packers going to have a fun weekend out in LA. But that'll do it for today's show, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Dean Burhau Gall for joining us to talk about the NFC North. And we'll see you later, folks. Next edition of Railbird Central on Monday. The show airs every Monday, Wednesday, Friday live at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. And on demand and podcasted at a later point in the day. So We'll see you, folks. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. I leave you today with a song called The Place That I Call Home by the infamous String Dusters on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack. Go.